There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. We'll talk to my buddy John Sharp from AL.com in just a second. getting in discussions of the old Solomons with a buddy there on the text line. Yeah, I remember the old Solomons there. It kind of brings back when we're out at Voodoo Wings, that neighborhood there, right? The old Solomons there by South. Were the pool tables ever fully functioning there? Do y'all remember that? Gosh, that was a long time ago. Long time ago. Question about Fauci. Well, I tell you, we'll get some Fauci. We'll get the Fauci Christmas stuff tomorrow, probably on the show, because I've got John. We got to talk about tomorrow's runoff election, but also I have a discussion of coyotes on the loose in Mobile. We'll get to later on in the hour. But without ado, let's bring on from AL.com my buddy John Sharp. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean, how you doing?
Good. Let's talk about what, before we get into all this, like, politics and Election Day and all that stuff, how about the Hawkeye? Can you want to talk football for a second here?
Yeah, I would love to.
I mean, I'm just, right now. You started talking about this with, I mean, everybody knows, so my buddy John is an Iowa Hawkeyes fan. That's a home base for you. I love the wave into the hospital thing that they do. They've kind of gotten into my heart as a team that I like. And we talked early in the season. You're like, yeah, they're pretty good, but we got this challenge and that challenge. How do you feel? Number three?
Yeah, I think, you know, they've come out of the gate and playing great football. They look phenomenal on Friday night. They played Maryland at Maryland. Tua's brother is quarterback at Maryland, but they really shut him down. I think there was like five interceptions. I mean, it was just, they got an excellent defense. They got an offense that's still a work in progress, but typical Iowa teams, it usually improves as the season goes on. So they have a very favorable schedule. The only, I guess, challenge, real big challenge, will be this coming Saturday. They host Penn State. Penn State looks really good. You know, they beat Auburn, questionable victory there, but they won at home against Auburn. And, you know, Penn State's got a good team, quite a reversal for them. They were 0-5 last year to start the season, turned around this year, and they're 5-0. So this is a big 3-4 matchup this weekend. It's the first time since 1997 that two top five teams in the Big Ten played each other, and one of the teams wasn't Ohio State.
Right.
So that's a statistic for you there that I think a lot of people like to hear.
I do, too.
Some parity for a change. And so it'll be a lot of fun. I mean, these are two football teams that have incredibly passionate fan bases. I mean, we know about the passion down in here, but, you know, in the Big Ten, you have passionate fan bases as well that are just not Ohio State or Michigan. So I think it's going to be a great showcase, and I'll be glued to it, that's for sure. And yes, I have my biases.
Yeah, I'll be watching. It's definitely got my interest, and so good. I just want to say that as you are a solid fan, no wavering year to year to year, to see Iowa at number three on the AP, I smiled when I saw that.
Yeah, and you know, the winner of this game will be the legit three, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you definitely have the top two teams, and there's quite a separation, but it's four teams getting the tournament at the end, and so, you know, that's where the jockeying begins.
Oh, then all my opinions change, you know. But at this point, I'm going to be very nice.
Yeah, it's a little early still, and I know where these things usually go, so I'm cautiously optimistic.
Let's talk about, as we talk about competitions out there, let's talk about runoff elections tomorrow, and District 1, 2, and 6, and kind of a different story in each one. I mean, they're not this, you know, so let's kind of go through this. First of all, well, let's do it chronologically here. District 1. And, you know, this has had, I mean, it's had drama. I guess 6 is the one that hasn't even had the, in a normal year, 6 might have seemed like more drama, but 1 and 2 are, I think, the winners. So District 1. So this is to replace outgoing Councilman Fred Richardson. Talk to me about tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, the big thing is the history of one of the candidates here, and that's Herman Thomas. He's the former Mobile City County Circuit Judge, and I didn't realize this would be the first time, if he wins this election tomorrow, this would be the first time he would be in public office since he resigned before the legal proceedings back in 2007. So this is quite a turnaround for him if he can pull off this victory. But yeah, it's a, you know, there is quite a history here involving former Judge Thomas. He's going up against Corey Penn. You know, Judge Thomas is, you know, it's kind of a generational battle too. Corey Penn is a younger candidate. Judge Thomas is, I believe, 60 years old. Judge Thomas has secured a key endorsement in Councilman Fred Richardson, very popular in District 1. And so it'll be interesting to see. Corey Penn finished with more votes on August 24th. He got, I believe, 1,625 to Herman Thomas's 1,320. And I kind of throw those out the window, and we'll see where we're at tomorrow. But yeah, Judge Thomas has the, you know, he has that history there. He's addressed it. He certainly thinks it's time clearly to move on from that. But he addresses it. He is the current director of the Toulmanville Crichton Development Corp. So he's involved in the community. It's not like, you know, he had this situation years ago and disappeared and just reappeared all of a sudden. He's been part of the community and, you know, talking to folks, that are linked into District 1, you know, they say they see him around. I mean, he shows up to community meetings. He's present. He's going to be a tough one for Corey Penn to beat tomorrow. But, Corey Penn is well known in the district as well. He is the branch director with the Boys and Girls Club, as well as a youth pastor. So, it's kind of one of those generational matchups, young versus old, I guess. And that's kind of the lay of the land for District 1. But, yeah, the Judge Thomas is a past issues with, been well played out in national media about 10 years ago involving paddling of jail inmates, accusations of that, and the jury trial that occurred after it is the kind of the looming issue in this race.
You talk about Councilman Richardson's endorsement of Herman Thomas, but in addition, it was such a strange thing. It will stand out to me that when you have Fred Richardson and Sam Cochran, Mobile County Sheriff, both endorsing the same person, I mean, it catches your attention. It's not a common thing. I mean, that brings up this whole other discussion of how much of an undercurrent is there of annexation in who people are endorsing.
There's a lot of head scratching going on right now, not just in District 1, but especially in District 2. What we've seen, what's been reported by multiple media outlets here locally with regards to some of the money involved in District 2. There's got a lot of people wondering whether or not that all links back to the annexation forces, and if there's this big push to have a special election in District 2, if that is the result, if that's pretty much the end result. Of course, there is no anybody saying on the record, yeah, that's the reason why we're putting money in this particular race. But, you know, people are in especially on the William Carroll side, and some of his supporters are really questioning, you know, why this money is appearing supporting Levon Manzi at a very sensitive time in this race. And, you know, like I said, it's been well reported here in the last couple of, you know, in the last week. It's been a, you know, I'm flipping the District 2 here, but, you know, that's kind of where the focus is at. It's just such an unusual race. Mobile's never seen anything like it before. Very few cities have, and it's, you know, it involves emotion and obviously tragedy, but, you know, we also have whether or not this should go on to a special election. That's really the question here.
Okay, and let's talk about that so people understand kind of how this works, right? Let's take it for a second. We're going to go into the mechanics of this. So we've gone from District 1 to District 2. Like you said, you have the way the ballots are, the way the rules work. Levon Manzi's name will appear on the ballot, you know, along with William Carroll. The motivation to vote, if, okay, not even the motivation, let's just talk facts. If the deceased, Levon Manzi, gets more votes than William Carroll tomorrow, what happens?
Okay, so if Levon Manzi gets more votes, that'll clearly trigger a special election, but that cannot occur until after November 1st. So the new council gets seated, and then the new council will set a date to be determined. I'm not sure if it's what's not clear to me is whether or not it'll be 60 to 120 days after the runoff date or after November 1st. But at some point after November 1st, there'll be a special election set. We should have some of those answers cleared up, you know, after Tuesday. But you know, there'll be a special election set to determine who will be the next District 2 city councilman. And because there would be a vacancy on the council. Now, what Mayor Stinson could do is appoint someone to serve out the remainder of Levon Manzi's term. He did that last month, a week ago today. We all saw what happened there and has not materialized. He still could do that between now and November 1st. Now, whether he does that or not is to be determined. We still have several weeks left in the current term, not much time. And, you know, there's no indication that the mayor will do that. But, you know, we'll know more again after tomorrow's results. But, yeah, that's what happens if Levon Manzi wins a special election to be determined sometime after November 1st. On the exact date will be determined after November 1st.
So, I mean, there's a strategic part of this. If people would vote, not just people voting emotionally to vote for Levon Manzi with his passing. There's a strategy here. Somebody who wants to see a special election, somebody else get in the election, would vote for Levon Manzi to move this to a special. So somebody at that point, somebody else could get in, right?
Right. And there's some concerns from some of the supporters of William Carroll, and we've reported on this as well, that could potentially, you know, they're concerned that you might get someone that might be the other vote that would support an annexation plan that would not be favorable to their viewpoints on the issue. If you back up to 2019, the very difficult vote at the time, it was 4-3. It was the four white members of the council versus the three black members of the council, and it was a very polarizing type of vote. You know, they're wondering if the concern is if you have a special election, you have low voter turnout, could have a lot of money flowing into this particular election, and you might have a candidate that might go against that particular vote. Mm-hmm. I think is some of the worries that are going on right now, especially from some of the supporters of Mr. Carroll. So, and that's kind of where we're at. Now, you know, exactly who's going to run in that special election. If we get to a special election, I do not know. I have no idea yet. We had some of the candidates who ran in the August 24th election. I guess they could potentially reconsider running. So I think all eyes will be on, you know, how this, what the actual outcome is on Tuesday, and where we go from there. Now, if William Carroll wins, he gets sworn in on November 1st.
Right. That's a done deal.
End of story. So.
Well, Ed, because, I mean, the talk of $100,000 being spent, I mean, while I'd love to help them spend that $100,000, it's tough. I mean, it's almost like a Brewster's Millions situation to try to spend $100,000 on this with just days to go. I mean, I'm interested how you do that.
Well, and as Carroll has come back and said, or it's been since reported that you know, if you have a special election, that's going to be costly as well.
Yep.
City clerk's office estimates about $134,000. So, you know, that's, you know, their argument is, well, wait a minute here, I'm on the ballot. Vote for me, you don't have to spend that kind of money to have a special election either. Now, Manzi's family certainly wants, you know, they want to see this thing taken to completion. They want voters to come out and support Levon Manzi. Manzi never lost an election. When he Mobile County School Board and Mobile City Council, he never lost an election. They see this as a final stamp of approval, and you know, there's a lot of emotion with the family that's still in mourning, obviously, but you know, but politically speaking, there's a lot to move through still on this, and you know, especially if Levon Manzi wins.
Yeah,
you know, who's going to run and what's going to be the biggest issues when they're running? And District 2 is one of the more dynamic districts of the city. I mean, you got downtown Mobile, clearly, you know, a lot going on there. And you got the Africatown community as well. There's so much going on there right now as well. A lot of investment going on behind the scenes to prepare that area for economic development or tourism. So, yeah, it's just a district with a lot going on. You got your historic neighborhoods all connected. And so, you know, if Levon Manzi wins on Tuesday, this thing is far from over.
Coming right back, more with John Sharp from AL.com and talk about tomorrow's runoffs right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Good to continue our conversation with my buddy John Sharp from AL.com. Tomorrow's runoff elections in 1, 2, and 6 for the city of Mobile. Turnout was, is anemic a nice enough word for the regular elections? What do we expect for runoff?
Yeah, I don't think the expectation is for a huge turnout, but this one's gotten more publicity, I think, in the lead into the August 21st election, simply because it's so unusual. I think people have seen it, you know, they're especially if you live in District 2, you've seen the coverage a lot of Councilman Manzi. You know, so that probably brings the awareness factor up a little bit, and that might be helpful. And I think in District 6, there's been a lot of, you know, especially from City Councilwoman Bess Rich, County Commissioner Connie Hudson, is a lot of reminders that people need to come out and vote. Whether or not that's registering or not, we'll find out. I'm not hearing too much more out of District 1, but, you know, I'm skeptical that we're going to have you know, these runoffs don't typically draw a huge turnout, but this one has been it's just unusual. It really is. Yeah. And, you know, it just carries a lot of, a lot of ambiguity to it. I'm not sure exactly what to expect tomorrow, which makes our job interesting.
Yes, it really does. Yes, it does. You know, we'll job. I mean, you and I are going to have a new city council makeup to talk about. You know, it's good. The old discussions will now be freshened up. I'm interested in what happens, in early November when they seat the new council.
And you're correct, but we might not have finality either. So that's another thing. It's just you got to stay on your toes tomorrow and see what happens, and then kind of sit back on Wednesday and assess where we're heading.
District 6. Let's talk about that. Just got 2 minutes left here.
Yeah, District 6. You have. Scott Jones, he's a retired U.S. Army veteran. He's neighborhood association president out in District 6. He's running against Josh Woods, the current executive director of the grounds. They both had kind of interesting, forum that I believe Jeff Poore was the moderator of just a couple weeks ago. And, you know, they just kind of got into the issues a little bit. But the thing that kept popping up, you know, as far as messaging goes, is you know, Jones kind of distinguished himself as, hey, I'm this mature leader. I got experience, vision, and the backbone to do the job. I also have endorsements of Bess Rich, Connie Hudson, and Jane Conklin. And Woods, on the other hand, you know, he touted his youth and, you know, kind of his, you know, looking forward to the future, that he's best in this community. And, you know, he wants to bring more community forums into the back to the city, and he's got young children. So you kind of have this interesting, you know, youth versus experience again. So that's something to keep an eye on District 6 tomorrow.
All right. Remind folks who want to get more, of course, they can go to AL.com or find you on Twitter if they want to talk about, you know, Hawkeyes football.
Yeah. At John Sharp 99. And no, I'm not going to talk about the Ohio State University.
See, they're already starting on this text line. How the Ohio State fans have invaded this text line. I'm just letting you know. So we're talking
time,
Iowa.
Now, the last time Iowa played Ohio State, it's been several years ago, but the last time Iowa put up a 50-burger on them. So, you know, that's all I got to say about that.
Well said. John, we appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
All right, Sean. Thank you.
There's John Sharp from AL.com. Heads up, too. You're looking at junk around the house here. It's getting ready to be fall, getting towards the holiday season. Maybe it's time to get rid of that junk. And if you do that, I got the guy for you. The guy I've used in my home, I use here at the station. That's my buddy Trey with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Easy to make an appointment as well. Go online to 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com or pick up the phone and call 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And they'll make an appointment with you. Find a day that works for you, a window of time that works for you. They show up, you show them the junk, and they say, okay, it's going to cost this. If you say yes, they get to work and get it done right then. The people we use, like I said, here at our radio station and at my home, 1-800-GOT-JUNK, online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. Check them out today. Coming right back, it's triathlon time. We'll splain next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. This segment of the show brought to you by Stamps.com. Okay, you small business like us, if somebody goes and gets stamps, here's the stuff I'm supposed to say, but I'm going to put this down for a second. If somebody's out getting stamps, they're not doing the job that you hired them to do. They're not doing the thing they do that makes your business great, right? That's why we use Stamps.com. So if somebody's not out getting stamps, you simply use your computer to print official U.S. postage 24/7, any letter, any package, any class of mail, anywhere you want to send it. And once your mail is ready, just schedule a pickup or a drop-off. It's that simple. And with Stamps.com, you'll get discounts of up to 40% off post office rates and 66% off UPS shipping rates. That adds up, doesn't it? Saves you time, saves you money, and no wonder nearly 1 million small businesses, just like us, use Stamps.com. So stop wasting time going to the post office or sending somebody out to do that. Go to Stamps.com instead. There's no risk, and when you use my promo code Sean, my first name, you'll get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in my name, Sean, S-E-A-N. I spell it the fast way. Stamps.com, promo code Sean, Stamps.com. Never go to the post office again. All right, and Brian Comer joining us in studio, and we're talking triathlons. Often people hear you discussing legal matters with Dalton, but we're going to talk about swimming, bicycling, running, all that kind of good stuff. Absolutely. Yeah, well, let's talk, and I want to talk about, as we look at that, Why?
That's a great question. I mean, and I guess the best why is it goes to a great cause.
Yeah.
So it's benefiting the Mobile Bar Foundation. Our firm, thankfully, is able to sponsor it this year. Tobias McCormick and Kermer were the presenting sponsor, but it's put on by the Mobile Bar Foundation, and that's the charitable arm of the bar.
Okay.
And this triathlon, it's great. It highlights all of the beauty of Dauphin Island, all of the things that are available on the island, but then it enables us to give away money to charities that are associated with the legal field. So like the last year that we had this, we haven't been able to have it for the past 2 years, last year because of COVID,
right,
and the year before because of a hurricane that was
I remember, at the
very last minute. But the last year we were able to give in 2018, it helped us donate over $70,000 to local charities here in Mobile.
Fantastic.
It's a great time. I mean, I personally do not participate because you know I have to put it on.
So That makes sense, counselor.
Well, I'm not doing it, but it's a really great event and enables us to do some great things. And in fact, it's enabled the foundation to donate over $330,000 to local charities here in Mobile since 2016. So
good for y'all. So that comes through the Mobile Bar Association.
We're an arm of the Mobile Bar Association.
Okay, so this event raises that money, and for folks that want to come watch, because maybe there's somebody who could pull themselves together this quickly to be ready to compete, but if I want to be a spectator, I want you to perfect setting, Dauphin Island, gorgeous. Right. What am I going to go see? Where's the bicycling going on? Where's the swimming going on? Where's the running going on?
So everything originates out of the transition area. I had to learn this as I learned
transition
about
transition area.
So since there are three sports that are involved, it starts with the swim, the 600-yard swim, then a 16.7-mile bike ride, and then the 5K. Well, all of that is from the hub of the transition area, and that's where you transition from swimming to getting on the bicycle,
okay,
from the bicycle to then running. And so it's all right there at the Isle Dauphine Country Club, and all right there at the pool, and then there's a post party at the little grill area there by the pool. It's really cool.
So we're trying the Gulf. Are we swimming in the Gulf or the pool?
Yep, in the Gulf.
Okay,
it's a 600 yard open water swim, but it's really cool because right there off of the Isle Dauphine, it's actually protected water, and so it's a Gulf swim, but you're not, you know.
Because Pelican Island's joined to Dauphin Island now. There, so you got that swim. It's still open water swim.
Oh, it is. Yes, it's very much an open water swim, but it's not quite the wave action that you would get, say, like at Panama City.
Right. Yeah, so. Brings a whole other component in there.
Indeed.
We're going to do 4-foot seas. Y'all got to swim. This
exactly.
one's not going to be like
exactly.
that. And then, so they start, you said, with a swim.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're sopping wet. Now what do we do next? We get on a bicycle or we run?
So then, so you get out of the Gulf and you run to the transition area, you towel off and you hop on your bike. And the bike course is really awesome because you get to make two passes over the bridge, over the Dolphin Island Bridge.
It's good for us to watch. I don't know if I think that's good if I'm pedaling, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's great once you top the summit of the bridge and then you're on the way down. But yeah, so it's a 16.7-mile ride that, again, originates out of that transition area. And it goes all the way down towards the fort at the end and then back up and then over the bridge. When you get to the end, you turn around, come back over the bridge. And
okay.
Make your way back to the club.
Now we got
to
run.
And then you got a 5K on top of that, right down Orleans Drive. And then basically you make a big circle and come back up on the golf course. So it's pretty cool. I mean, you're right there. You're running by the Gulf.
Right.
And so folks who want to come, they can. We're always in need of volunteers. You can go to the website, trythegulf.com, and you can sign up to be a volunteer. Or if people just want to come and see it, it's a lot of fun. And it blew me away the first time I saw it because it was my first triathlon to ever – you know, watch, much less put on. And we have a great race director, Judge Davis, who's done a bunch of triathlons and is this is a certified U.S. Triathlon Association event. So, I mean, it's not, you know, a bunch of yahoos putting it on. It's a legitimate.
So this is like people, and I know talking to Judge Davis in the past, people who like compete in this stuff, they need these races, this is a certified competitive race. So these are the people, not that there's not people out there just doing it to see if they can do it. Because I've competed in one before just to see if I could do it. But these are people that are – this is their thing.
Well, yeah, and so the beautiful thing about this event is called a sprint triathlon, which is based on the distance, is it's friendly for the first-timer or it's for the seasoned professional. And we actually have some professionals from the Gulf Coast who are going to be participating.
That's what I was wondering. Do people travel – like, I'm sure they kind of keep up with what's going on and – people travel in to do this?
Right, sure. And there are – this is the end of the season for triathlons. We're one of the last ones. And we're the only one in Mobile and Mobile County. And so people come in and first-timers and the seasoned pros. And in fact, the swim is staggered for that kind of a differentiation. So a brand-new person's not going to be right up at the front with, you know, the Michael Phelps of some tri-club.
Dolphin person.
Right, yeah.
So – if we and go to the website, once again, the website.
Trythegulf.com.
T-R-I.
T-R-I, yes. Trythegulf.
And if somebody wants to volunteer. But if somebody is wanting to come watch this.
Yes.
Kind of give me the, what time do I get there? Where do I park? How do I stay out of the way?
Sure.
You know, those kind of things.
So the main thing is if you're not on the island, if you're coming to the island, you need to get there before 6 o'clock.
Okay.
Because the bridge is going to shut down about 6 to 6:15, because what we have to do is put out traffic cones for the competitors, because from 6 to about 10 o'clock when the bicycle portion's over, they're going to go to one lane of travel, and it's going to be a police escort across the bridge in both directions.
Okay.
And so you know, you got to wait. And so you definitely get there before 6. Park just down to the west. There's a parking lot if you keep going past the club. And then we'll have transportation bringing people to the Isle Dauphine Club. And then you can stand there and watch. And it's really awesome because it's right around sunrise is when they get into the water to start the swim. It's really cool.
So that's happening. Get there before 6 if you want to do it on your own and
that's
get
right.
in. And give me an idea. This wraps up, you know, if people are trying to schedule out a Saturday by lunchtime or something, or they're heading back home.
Absolutely. And I'm sorry, I misspoke. It's actually trythegulf.org.
O-R-G.
T-R-I-thegulf.org. Yeah. But yeah, so it's, you know, half day at most. Of course, if I was doing it, it would probably go into the afternoon.
You and I both.
But
maybe a 2-day event for me.
Probably, But yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a, you know, we will have some COVID restrictions in place to make sure that, you know, so it won't be quite as big of a party as it normally is. But there's a, those over 21, Fairhope Brewing is donating beer. It's a really, really good event. We've got some great, if I can put in a plug for the sponsors, again, my firm, Tobias McCormick & Comer, is the presenting sponsor, but also Roberts Brothers, Wind Creek Casino, Infirmary Health Systems, and the Mobile Sports Authority have all been instrumental instrumental in helping us to put this thing on. And then a bunch of the local firms here are sponsoring it. And it's just a really good event. And again, the greater purpose is a heck of a lot of fun for the participants, for the spectators. But then it actually makes a huge difference when we're able to give checks to the local charities at the end of the year.
Giving back.
Greatest feeling. Absolutely.
Hey, thank you for stepping up and doing it with your firm and yourself and the time you spent.
Yeah, well, glad to do it. And I appreciate you having me on.
All right. You and I'll do one. It'll be like a 2 or 3 day deal. So when we do it, it'll
be
good.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
Brian Cover, Tried the Gulf, our guest. We're wrapping it up here in a couple minutes on Midday Mobile. We'll have time for a checkup here before we wrap on this Monday. This is Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
It is time for a checkup on FM Talk 106.5. Dan Brennan, along with a better friend from Alabama Orthopedic Clinic. Of course, Alabama Orthopedic Clinic visits us once a month. And Dr. Russell Hudgens, a longtime friend from Alabama Orthopedic. Great to see you again, my friend.
Thank you, Dan.
Let's talk about where your workplace, Alabama Orthopedic Clinic, as it relates to the everyday citizen and somebody that one way or the other ends up banged up or sore or somehow has got to end up at your offices. What are they going to find?
We at Alabama Orthopedic Clinic are orthopedic specialty group of 15 physicians. We're located in two offices, one on the Beltline between Dolphin Street and Airport Boulevard. You can drive by the interstate there on I-65 and see us in our new office up in Saraland, which has been open now for approximately 6 weeks, and we're very happy of that office. But to answer your question, orthopedic patients or those patients who've either suffering from ailments from injuries or from aging, and we try to help those patients deal with those issues and restore their life.
So let's talk about some of these services. Well, we'll start with outpatient surgery. How often is that performed and how routine can it be? And because someone may be pretty concerned about being given that diagnosis.
Our outpatient surgery center is a top-of-the-line service center, and we're very proud of it proud of the nurses and our staff that work there. I think you will receive no better care anywhere in the world than you will receive at our outpatient center. The world is trending towards outpatient care, whether it be in surgery or other areas. And most people are at this day, particularly just don't want to go to the hospital. As a result now of COVID, people are being isolated at the hospital. And so if they can do anything in an outpatient setting, they would much rather do it that way. And up to 75 to 80% of the procedures that we do in orthopedics can be done in an outpatient setting.
You also hit on something that I think is really important too, the support staff, the people that you see. Often the doctor is the last person that you see when you're going to have any kind of procedure. You see staff people, you see administrators, you see nurses, you see assistants. All those people at Alabama Orthopedic Clinic, I think you'd have to say that they take great pride in delivering kind of a level of hospitality, if you will.
That's great. You said it correctly. They take great pride in caring for the patients and very concerned on how the patient care is delivered and how those patients, when they leave our office, felt about their care, and I think most people feel that they received excellent care. I can be a great doctor, but if I don't have a great supporting staff, then that care may or may not be delivered in the best way or perceived as the best way. I think with our staff, you come in, you get treated with special care, and you leave with a good feeling.
I had a conversation with a gentleman one time about that. He was undergoing some treatments, and not in an orthopedic way, but another way. He just talked about how important that staff is. So you guys are great. You're good with the staff.
Well, thank you. I think, and I can compliment our staff. I think we have a fantastic staff that's very good at what they do and take pride in what they do.
So more and more people are not necessarily choosing outpatient surgery, but it's being chosen for them.
Partly insurance, it actually is in most cases cheaper to do as an outpatient. Mm-hmm. If your insurance is paying for it, they prefer to do it as an outpatient. But in the times I've had to need any medical care, I'd much rather do it in an office-based setting than have to go to the hospital to do it.
Agreed. I think most of our listeners feel the same way. After surgery, here comes all the fun of physical therapy. But maybe getting better is kind of fun. It might not be something you're necessarily looking forward to, but talk about your team in physical therapy and how they make that transition as good as it can be.
We have a great staff of both physical therapists as well as occupational therapists. And for those who don't know what occupational therapy versus physical therapy, occupational therapy deals a lot more with injuries that involve occupation, but particularly with hand and upper extremity work as well. But with physical therapy and occupational therapy, you can get all the therapy needs you need there. We can also, again, be not only a good doctor, but a good surgeon, but it takes a really good dedicated therapy staff to get us the best outcomes that we can from those surgeries.
So when, as an orthopedic surgeon, and you're a general orthopedic surgeon, correct?
Correct.
When do you know, you have a, someone comes in, I'd like to see Dr. Hudgens. First of all, how are they directed to you? What would their injury or ailment be?
A lot of times it's just that they prefer to see a certain doctor, but mm-hmm. if they're not certain, a general orthopedist, we kind of see just about all the orthopedic illnesses. Basically, anything that may deal with spinal injuries, shoulder injuries, arm injuries, leg injuries. In today's specialty worlds, you have hip doctors, you have knee doctors, you have shoulder doctors, foot doctors. And sometimes I frequently get asked this question, what body part do you take care of?
I asked you that question when you walked in.
I tell people, I'm a general orthopedist. So mm-hmm. if you're not certain that you have, for instance, a shoulder pain, is that coming from my neck or coming from my shoulder? A general orthopedic surgeon mm-hmm. can tell you that. Same with the go. You've got hip pain. Is it coming from my hip? Is it coming from my back? What's going on? That's a good reason to see possibly a general orthopedist to try to help that out.
Often do people come in and they've kind of self-diagnosed and they got it all wrong?
One of my common questions I often say, this may be a dumb question to you, but what do you think is wrong with you? Mm. Because in today's world with internet and research, people often have looked up their complaints, whether it be some Medline search or whatever. And so I ask them, what do they think is wrong? Probably 80% of the time they're right.
Okay.
But and they need that confirmation from me. But sometimes I shed light and tell them, no, I think this is what's wrong.
Shed light into this. Shoulder and neck pain, which I know bothers a lot of people. It seems to be very prevalent. What's the cause and how do you get better?
You know, the most often complaint I get when people with shoulder pain, I always ask them this question too, is does this bother you at night? And that's what really brings people in, is when you can't get a good night's sleep, you're going to go get something done about it. So oftentimes, depending also on the age of the patient, was it caused by an injury? That would lead us down one pathway to figure out whether it may be something they did, for instance, in the shoulder. It could be an injury to the rotator cuff. If it's coming out of the neck, possibly a disc-related issue. If it's not for any reason, then is it the age of the patient, a degenerative process? Mm-hmm. And most of these conditions can be treated. They're not usually treated with surgery. And if it is, it's definitely a last choice option for most people. But we will go through the treatment options. We'll go through diagnostic testing, possibly try some medications, some therapy, possibly an injection to see if that can help the problem resolve.
How about lumbar and hip pain? And how common is that with your patients that just come walking in the door?
That by far, that's the most common complaint
really?
That we treat. Mm. I'd say between 40 and 50% of the people that come into an orthopedic clinic will come in as their primary complaint being something related to their lower back.
Wow. And you're quick on top of that, right? You can diagnose.
We see it frequently, so we hopefully understand it fairly well.
So diagnostic testing, what exactly goes in? What does that term mean?
Most often when we're talking diagnostic testing, if you go to a general medical doctor, they're going to be talking about doing EKGs and blood work and urinalysis. When we're using diagnostic testing in orthopedics, it's diagnostic x-rays. We have diagnostic ultrasound. And we have MRI scanning.
So basically, you are proud of where you work. You've got a great support team around you. You're saying if you've got any of these ailments we just talked about, come on into Alabama Orthopedic Clinic because my team, you feel confident they're going to treat them right, right?
That's correct. And if you just don't know that, hey, I'm having some problem in a certain area, or another thing, a general orthopedist, oftentimes I see people, they have knee pain or arthritis. At the same time, their shoulder's hurting. Mm. And they don't want to make an appointment to see the knee doctor or the shoulder doctor. And we can see them for more than that one simple problem at the same time.
Dr. Hudgens, thanks for your time today. Appreciate you coming by and us having the opportunity to learn so much.
Thank you, Dan.
You got it. The portion of the show is called It's Time for a Checkup with Alabama Orthopedic Clinic. You can find out more about what they do at Alabama Orthopedic Clinic very easily online at alortho.com.
You're proud.
out of your yard or have an exceptional garden or plant, then share a photo to the FM Talk 106.5 Facebook, and you could be a winner. The picture with the most likes wins a yard sign that lets your neighbors know that you won. Plus, the flip side features a permanent full-color plain gardening planting wheel. You'll always know when and what to plant. Complete details on our Facebook, and Bill Finch will announce the winner each week on Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast, Sunday morning at 9 on FM Talk 106.5.